Hello everyone, welcome to LTV Talks. Today we have Michael with us. Michael has a very interesting background. He comes from the finance world actually, and he has worked with companies like Deloitte in his previous life. Since then, of course, he has co-founded and is now the CEO of Conversion.io. Conversion.io is a mobile subscriptions growth platform where they help subscription apps with subscription infrastructure, analytics, and different growth tools. He also hosts a wonderful podcast called the App Revenue Growth Podcast. And with that, Michael, welcome to the show.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me.
Of course. By the way, super interesting background. So maybe we start there, right? Like I would love to know how you went from the world of finance to creating something like a subscription growth tool, right? Like how did that look like?
Yeah, sure. So starting from the beginning, I actually have a physics master's degree. And then I kind of switched from physics and started my career in consulting at Deloitte, where we were building complex financial models to a variety of technology companies. And this experience exposed me to different business models, understanding key drivers, KPIs behind different businesses, and mostly like high-tech businesses, internet companies, fast-growing companies. And I was kind of introduced to the world of startups this way. And I kind of felt interested, and this is when I realized that I probably want to join a startup or maybe even start my own. So the first step was to join a growing company, and I moved there in like operational role. It was a travel tech company, but they had a large mobile app user base, so I kind of get some exposure to mobile side of the company. And I was in charge of like different things there, but analytics was always in like scope of my responsibility, so to speak. So I was very involved with analytics. And it's kind of sparked my interest, especially around mobile apps. So I was like thinking about starting my own company, my own startup. And the first thing that we tried with my co-founder is actually building a mobile fitness app. We thought it's kind of interesting idea. I saw a lot of people like moving into this space, building their apps. I saw that you can actually build something meaningful with a very small team. I think this is what's exciting about mobile apps, that you don't need to have like 100 people. You don't have a lot of operations there. So it's kind of product and monetization. And we expected to monetize with subscriptions, and we actually started implementing subscription. And this is where we stumbled upon like complexity of subscription monetization, and actually how hard it is to implement, to maintain, to have accurate data around subscriptions and so on. And we built, I would say, what was prototype for Conversion for my current company. It was built like an internal tool for our mobile app that we started. And while building this internal prototype, we realized that this might be a company in itself, and it might be interesting for us to work on this. We talked to like people we knew in this mobile ecosystem, and kind of asked them, like, guys, if we build this and offer you the subscription management solution, would you take it? Are you struggling as we did with tracking subscription, implementing them, getting the analytics right? And they say, yeah, absolutely. We are spending a ridiculous amount of time on this. We have this and this and this issues with the data. So we'll be glad to at least try out what you can offer. This is how we started. This is how we come up with Conversion.
That's crazy. I don't think we find a lot of people with a physics background in this space. So I think you must be a rare resource.
I don't think that's that rare, because, you know, it's like engineering, science, math, engineering background, and everyone somehow moving after some like trials and tribulations. Usually people end up in either like developer role or product role, and so sometimes finance, but finance didn't stuck with me.
I am an engineer myself. I worked as a construction engineer in my previous life, and then of course made the move into marketing and so on and so forth. A few questions, Michael. So one is, it's super inspiring as a story, And when you were going through this zone of like you wanted to create your own startup, where were you based at this time? Were you already in that ecosystem of like, you know, startup world, and you were talking to people who had a lot of that, or what kind of ecosystem were you in?
Yeah, I had a lot of, as I said, I had several friends who were building mobile apps. And in general, this company where I worked at, it was travel tech, and like, I would say half of personnel of the company were engineers, product people, very strong mobile team with iOS app, Android app, product manager for this. And so I would say I was surrounded by engineers, product people, and people who were trying to build some mobile apps.
Nice.
And it kind of helps. Of course, it's kind of where I get some inspiration, some ideas for that. If I stayed in, let's say, Deloitte and didn't have this community of developers, product people around me, I wouldn't come up with this idea and wouldn't be starting my own company.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, just relating it back to my story as well, it always, when I was at HelloFresh and it was growing, one topic that interested me a lot was subscriptions, because at that point, HelloFresh was one of the early subscription-based companies. And just as a model, it intrigued me so much. And I always feel like because I was here, because I was in the space in Berlin, where a lot of these apps were growing, it gave me a very good platform to, you know, to meet with people who had similar ideas and to at least understand the space a bit more as well.
Yeah, that makes sense.
One thing I picked up from what you said is also around like how small the teams were within mobile apps. And so I would love to get your perspective on like when there were these small teams, mm-hmm. sort of how were people and how did you do it for your first app in terms of managing subscription infrastructure, right? Just to give us an insight into what did it look like? What would you typically do? Would it be a black box and you would not get that transparency, or was it like, you know, how did you go around attributing and understanding subscriptions?
Yeah, so one of the ways and what a lot of people did is was like hack together something that kind of works and worked specifically for subscription management. So user can subscribe, can get premium access, and if they unsubscribe, they will lose premium access. And that was kind of it. And the problem there was with actually tracking the data with analytics and having the data to send it to marketing platforms to understand retention for each cohort, retention for marketing channels, and so on and so forth. So kind of people lived in the dark without the data. It was just the implementation on the device side. For example, there is this library, which is called, I think, Swift Store Kit, which allows you to kind of implement subscription on the device without any server-side receipt validation. So there is like this recommended way by Apple and similar stuff by Google to actually capture at the time of the initial subscription transaction. You need to capture some data, save it to your server, to your backend, and then get the subsequent data for the subscriber, see if he canceled the subscription, renewed subscription, whatever is happening with it, directly from Apple and Google, from your backend through API. And they have like server-to-server notifications for this to update from there and your backend and so on. But usually you don't have the resources, as you said, with a small team, you don't have the resources to build this stuff in-house. So they were like workarounds for this with the Swift Store Kit or something similar to that. But in this case, what happened, you didn't have transparency into your data. And essentially the only analytics that you have is like analytics on App Store Connect or Google Play, what they show you, but it's just like aggregated data, like your total revenue, your total number of subscribers and so on. It's very hard to make sense of it, to filter it, to understand what's actually going on. You don't have user level data in those platforms. I would say that actually, you know, it's not only was the problem for smaller companies, even larger companies, they kind of still, they were doing more advanced setup. They were trying to build this backend stuff themselves, but they were struggling with it anyways.
I see. So, you know, essentially what was happening is you have these smaller apps who, of course, didn't have like time or the resources to build something where they understood it completely. But then I always also hear that there were bigger companies who, even if they had the resources to build this, sometimes lacked either the expertise to get there. But a lot of times the systems were not very reliable. So the team had to be quite focused on only maintaining that infrastructure. Was that a big part of the equation as well? Like, is it difficult to maintain
it? It's still is. It's kind of the same now. And you're absolutely correct. So in general, let's say you're building a fitness app or education app or whatever app you want. You don't want to be building billion engine. You don't want to like build something like Stripe or anything like that just processes the payments, understand subscription status. It's completely different product, completely different set of like tasks you need to handle. So indeed, as I said, like larger companies, they build this in-house. A lot of them are still using in-house solutions and they do struggle. They see that corner cases are not covered. They do need to update this to like now, for example, at the moment, people are updating from Google billion library 4 to billion library 5, and you must update. If you don't update, essentially Google Play won't accept your app. So it's kind of constant work. You have to do some stuff to support it constantly, and you're still facing a lot of corner cases. You are still losing the data and so on and so forth.
Nice. And this is like the perfect pitch for your services as well, right? Like, and do you, one question that I had naturally on this was also when you are an app developer with a, let's say with a small team and you're just starting out, do you feel it's as important as something like building, of course, building a great product is at the core of everything. But do you feel like the initial app developers need this sort of infrastructure in the beginning? Or is it just because it's gotten so competitive that they now need these tools to be able to be, you know, to compete within the industry? Or is it just a matter that it was always needed and now we have the infrastructure to do it?
No, of course it was kind of always needed. I agree that it's got much more competitive. And if you are not using the right tools from the start, it's much harder to win in this case. But I think in general, it's like with all technology, when it's early and it just starts, there are not many tools to leverage it. Mm-hmm. And for example, I don't know, if we look back like 20 years, it was hard to build your site. Just to do some web service, you need like probably tens of thousands of dollars. Like also backend infrastructure, there were no like cloud providers like Amazon, and so on. So it was very complex, and then it evolved, and now you can kind of start a web app, or even I don't know, shop on Shopify in an instant, like in a couple of hours, and you don't need a single engineer to do this. This is like all provided out of the box because there is infrastructure built for that. And it's kind of happening, it's kind of the same story with mobile apps and with analytics and with subscription management or monetization in general. So when mobile apps appeared, there were no also product analytics. Like you said, you need to build great product. So I think the first set of companies in this vertical that appeared were Amplitude, Mixpanel, and some others who actually solved product analytics, where you can see how your users use your app, what's the retention rate, what buttons they click, like how much time they spend on each screen and so on. But at the start, people were building this internally, and I think this is like the story how Amplitude started as well. It was a team that worked, I don't remember exactly, maybe it was Facebook or Zingo or something like that, and they built internal analytics, and they realized that actually like any company with mobile app need this solution to out of the box. They don't need to build this from the scratch. So they started Amplitude. And it's kind of the same with subscription engine. I think what we are providing and what's available now in the market, it allows you to save a lot of time, and it lowers the barrier to enter, to start your mobile app. You don't need to build this additional piece of software, let's say, this billing system. You just take the SDK, read pretty simple documentation, spend a couple of hours on implementation, and you can start selling subscriptions like tomorrow. based on this. So it makes it easier. You save a lot of time. And on the one hand, so it's not just about analytics. It's just easier to start selling subscription. You don't need to kind of figure out how to hack together something that kind of works for access management, for subscription processing, first of all. And on the analytics side, I would say it's important. It's kind of, we do see sometimes that people build very complex products from the start with a lot of features, with very like complex product. And it doesn't really pick up because it's not, you know, it wasn't built in iterations. It wasn't built based on user feedback. It was more built on like someone's intuition and someone's perception how it should work. And this approach usually fails. And I see that these type of companies, they usually also want to have very complex monetization flow. Like they have a large set of in-app prices, different subscription prices, different subscription durations, different time when to show it. They want to implement discounts from the start. They want to implement some re-engagement and so on and so forth. And usually it doesn't matter when you're just starting. Usually maybe just one or two or three in-app products would be enough if you do it right to actually scale to some level where it will make sense to actually think of introducing more complexity into that.
That is such a wonderful insight, by the way, because I feel like what you're saying is, you know, with something like this, there are, of course, like these logical benefits, like, you know, you reduce your time to impact, right? Like if you wanted to understand your subscriptions monetization better, you know, a tool like yours would help them to really know that very quickly versus something that would have taken longer time and, you know, constant sort of need and care. But then the other part is also like, it allows you to have that iterative approach, right? So as you are building the product, you have the power of like insights to know what's working, what's not working, what seems to convert users better. And that sort of starts guiding your app development also in a way, but not only that, right? Like also acquisition. I remember one of your case studies was on, I think the app called Interval Time or Interval Fitness. Yeah. And I was reading about it and I think they 2x their revenue, right? Just because they started understanding what, you know, they started attributing Apple search ads correctly by using your tool. Now, you could argue that if a recent app developer or a new app developer has that information, it allows them to like, you know, really learn quickly and maybe also increase ROI from like these other measures, right? Like acquisition becomes more efficient, product development becomes a bit more iterative. So there are other benefits as well, other than the rational operational benefits, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I agree. You do need to have like full visibility to be able to take some actions to scale.
Yeah, absolutely. And so Michael, when you were now, let's say when you started Conversion, which was about 4.5 years ago, what was the landscape like in terms of not just these tools? Because I know that 4.5 years ago, you might have been like one of the first ones to build, you know, or start building these kind of solutions for app developers. What was the market like in terms of also, you know, the developers you were talking to? So, you know, when you were talking to these app developers, you mentioned some of the common pitfalls of today's app developers when we start talking about pricing and paywall and et cetera very quickly. What was the scene back then, right? Like, how did you find the space when you were just entering the market and you were looking for your first clients? What did people usually complain to you about, or what were some of the things that they were concerned about, let's say?
Yeah, I would say that indeed, there were no solutions on the market. And I guess like the major problem for everyone was accurate analytics tracking. Yeah. So they kind of, everyone knew how to get subscription management to make it work, to sell subscription. But everyone struggled with this accurate tracking of what happens to a subscription and actually getting this data and sending this data to where they need it. So like most of those platforms where they needed it, it's like AppsFlyer and Adjust, where people do their marketing attribution. So with one-off purchases, and essentially like AppsFlyer and Adjust, they appeared, I don't know, maybe 10, 12 years ago, and they were mainly targeting mobile games, and mobile games are using one-off purchases. And with one-off purchase, you can track it easily on the device when the device is running with the SDK. So you have accurate revenue data in like any platform, in AppsFlyer, in Adjust, in Amplitude, and so on. So they didn't have these issues. But when subscription apps started growing, they realized that they, like marketers of these apps, analysts of these apps, they realized that they don't have good visibility into their revenue in those platforms, because sometimes they see trial start event, user closes the app, doesn't open the app for 10 days. They don't know what happened. They don't know if this trial has converted to paying subscriber. They can track their marketing performance. So like one of the main issues for everyone was to actually figure out how to do analytics. And this is why one of our first products was to actually build the integration, provide the integration with AppsFlyer, with Adjust, some other platforms, with Amplitude as well. So it's super easy to add our SDK to your app, switch on this integration, start sending the events to AppsFlyer, Adjust, Amplitude, and see accurate revenue data there. So I think now kind of everyone has figured this out. They do have something to send this data. Someone built this in-house, someone using third-party solutions. So it's kind of now it's shifting more into actually a full-stack solution that gives you subscription management. And we see a lot of like movement to cross-platform subscription management. So people want to enable their users, let's say, to buy on the web and unlock premium access on the app, to buy on Apple platform and be able to switch to Android and have premium access there. So more like cross-platform access management stuff. And now it's much more about A-B testing. So people realize that there are some tools for these. Once again, they don't need to build this stuff internally. And they realize that there is a lot of value in using A-B testing. And once you have the analytics already in place, if you have the tools to actually do some experimentation and measure it accurately, it's like a no-brainer to grow your revenue.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there are so many levers, right, as well. Actually, it will be very cool to get your insight on this, because so whenever I talk to prospective app developers, you know, just as clients, I always see like there are these three sections, right? Like you have the famous, like, you know, traction, transition, and growth phases, right? So traction being like super early app developers. Transition is when you are growing and you're seeing very good impact and now you want to like really speed up. And then growth is when you are already at that scale when people kind of know your brand and you know you now need to be optimizing. If you look at the market in that way, how do you see the problems and like maybe how conversion helps apps at each of these stages? Do you feel like, because you mentioned, right, like cross-platform access issues. I think that that's a lot of transition and growth phases companies, right? Like who are hitting that idea now. Whereas in the traction phase, you are still maybe concentrating on paywall testing, pricing optimization, and things like that. So maybe just walk us through, like, how do you feel about these stages and like what the key pain points are there?
To be honest, I don't think that there is like this obvious split of needs and tools for the stages. I would say that everyone needs to implement subscription and maintain it and spend very few time on this. Do not allocate resources to this and be rather building their own product. Then everyone needs the analytics and A/B testing. Of course, you like it's a must have, and you must do it when you're figuring out your monetization. But also, as you scale, you should continue doing this because you're entering new countries, new markets, you're adding new features. So it's like an ongoing process. And actually, we see the larger the company gets, the more sophisticated it gets about A/B testing. They like hire people to be in charge of monetization or like growth and monetization, and have someone dedicated doing A/B testing all day long. So it's kind of all of these tools are required, I would say. What What I have noticed from communicating to companies of different sizes, and it kind of surprises me with the larger companies, I feel like a lot of the times there is like lack of communication between different departments or between different teams. So for example, let's say there is an engineering team, analytics team, growth or monetization team, and they are not really aware of each other's goals and obstacles. And for example, engineering team usually doesn't really care about analytics. They want this subscription management piece. They want to like enable subscriptions in the app and make sure that users are getting premium access, and they might be interested to do it like effortless on all the platforms and so on. But they do not think about analytics in this part. They kind of, it's not our problem. Someone else will figure this out. But actually, the whole company, the analytics team, but also marketing, everyone in the company needs analytics. And if you can get it like from the same setup, there is a lot of value in that. And the opposite thing with, let's say, analytics team. They just want to get analytics data. They want to get the data on subscriptions from Apple to AppsFlyer or from Apple to another platform, but they don't care about subscription management and what is happening there, what our engineers are doing. It's kind of working, so that's fine. And the same story with product people, like product or growth people. They want to grow the revenue. Their KPIs is to, let's say, increase conversion rate, increase retention, and ultimately grow revenue. So they're thinking about A-B testing, about the tools for A-B testing. But when you ask them, guys, how do you just process subscriptions and the payments? What do you use for it? We don't know. It's like engineers are doing this. So they're not aware of, and actually these engineers, they're busy maintaining this subscription management, and they can build less features that these product people want to build to kind of do experimentation. They don't realize that a lot of resources of the engineering team goes into building this infrastructure. So this like lack of communication sometimes is kind of surprising to me, and that there is no understanding that it's kind of all connected. And if, for example, you have this setup for subscription management, which gives you the data, then you solve a lot of problems. It powers your analytics, it powers integrations, third platforms analytics, and also it gives you the basis for A-B testing. To run A-B testing, you do need accurate data to be tracked.
This is insane, because this is so true. Also, in my experience, whenever I have spoken to any companies and I'm sure you've spoken to like 1,000 times more companies than I have, but you know, whenever I speak to small or big companies and ask them how they're actually, funnily, smaller companies are more aware of what they are doing versus some of the bigger companies who, exactly as you said, if you go and ask around like who owns this piece or who is even looking at this data and like what are we doing out of it, there is no clear role or responsibility that owns exactly this piece, and it feels like a very big piece to miss out on, right? Like you kind of get it, right? Like the product teams are building products, and you know they have their own things to take care of, and then engineering team kind of treats it as a roadmap initiative, right? It's not like a priority. It's like if something is broken, we'll fix it, but we are not actively trying to optimize it or make it better. And then if you look at marketing teams, acquisition, okay, that's another ball game, right? Like they're just looking at a lot of other top of the funnel aspects of things. But a lot of the times I also feel like CRM or retention teams don't have the transparent data on like what happened with the trials, right? Like we have these sort of tentpole events, if someone converted or didn't convert and things like that, but we don't try and go deeper than that, right? And I feel like with the acquisition team, a lot of times what happens is they have like these ROI indicators that are based on installs, sometimes activation, but never, very few times I've seen like subscriptions converted or trial conversion. Is that the case that you've seen as well, or is it different?
I would say on the marketing side, still for subscription apps, people do track, they kind of figure out how to track trial conversions. It's very hard to be successful in user acquisition if you don't track revenue data. So they kind of do this right. But in overall, I agree with you that everyone like kind of lives separately. And for example, user acquisition is not really connected to onboarding experience. Let's say paywall experience. They acquire traffic and they measure what happens, like how much revenue they got. But it's kind of living separately from monetization or product manager usually. And I also agree that it looks like in a smaller companies, it's not a problem. Actually, people are aware what's going on in other departments. It kind of makes sense. If you have, let's say, 10 people, it's easy to know what's on everyone's mind and what are the problems there and where the resources are going, like what everyone are busy with. But with, I don't know, 50 people, 100 people, it's already hard to track and everyone is just kind of doing their own thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think like, one thing that would be interesting to get your take on is when you're talking to these companies of different sizes, what is an okay, let's say maybe the smaller companies, who typically are the people who are into this, right? Like who are continuously using your testing tools or continuously digging up the analytics? And if you talk about, maybe let's start there, right? Like if you're a small company, who are these people who typically do this?
So for small companies, it's usually a product, I would say product person, someone who is in charge of product. But in this case, if it's a small company, he's very well aware of available engineering resources. He's very well aware if a lot of the time of engineering team goes into subscription management. He is very close with the engineering team. So he's aware of how subscription management is done. So it's easy to talk to them because it's kind of the same team. Usually on the demo call, it can be a product person and also an engineer, CTO, or maybe a co-founder if it's a small company. But in general, I would say this is why we also uncover this like disconnect between the teams in larger companies, because our product kind of have several pieces into it. It's the first layer is subscription management to implement subscription. And the second layer is to just give you analytics, show you the analytics for it. And then the third layer on top of that actually use, for example, A/B testing to leverage this data, use this tool and actually grow your revenue. So it's kind of three pieces. And it depends who found us from what marketing channel and so on. So it can be just like engineering team strictly interested in the subscription management part. And then we have to kind of ask like, how do you do the analytics piece? Are all the teams, do they happy with like what they have and uncover some problems there? And vice versa, like talking to product people, they are not aware of the subscription management piece. They don't know what's happening there, and we have to kind of ask them. Maybe I guess maybe we should set up another call with your engineering team to look deeper into this.
Crazy, it's almost interesting to always puzzles me whenever I listen to these insights, because all the time I'm thinking like this should be such a big topic, and maybe because I spend so much time or we spend too much time in this industry talking about all of this, it feels like, why are not more people in the organization talking about it? But yeah, I think it's almost like you don't know who's responsible. And that's why like no one really takes ownership of it, right?
But it's kind of, maybe it's on us also to do this education stuff to explain how this pieces are connected, that you don't need to spend the resources just on that from one tool, since it's all connected, you're getting all that value. And I think I'm looking, for example, at Amplitude, like what they are doing with their marketing, because it's kind of interesting to look at them. They're a big company, it's like public company with I think $5 billion valuation, and I read a lot about them, like talked to some people from Amplitude. And from the very beginning of the company, they spend a lot of time on educating the market. So they're issuing different like ebooks for product people, explaining the concepts, explaining what would be the correct setup, explaining what metrics to track, like what is North Star metric, and so on and so forth. So they're investing a lot into educating the market. And then market perceives them as like experts and they are experts in this in this field, and kind of it helps everyone. So I think maybe it's the same with our industry and with like subscription management. In my case, we should be talking more about this, explaining how it works, explaining what are the connections, what are the best practices, and so on.
Yeah, as we find our way through it, by the way, right? Like there are also, I feel like even the people who are into it and who are working at it are still also internally finding what the best practices are, right? In terms of like how should a team be set up, or what should be, you know, who should see this data? What should they do after they receive this? So yeah, I completely agree. And one thing that I was curious about is team structures, actually. So have you seen any success, you know, talk, maybe it's an ideal scenario in your head, or you have seen some clients or companies who have done this successfully. Typically, is there a, you know, a team structure or a role or a function that you are seeing that you feel like, okay, this is who needs, who typically, if they own something like subscriptions optimization, it's works well for the company because they are able to communicate to different stakeholders what's happening, and they're able to make the most out of it.
I think there are different approaches to that, and it depends on the size of the company. I don't know what is the best team structure, to be honest. But what we see is pretty common structure is that for like medium-sized companies and larger companies, to have someone on the product side and specifically monetization side, so someone dedicated to thinking about the pricing, paywalls, A/B experiments with this, like how do we monetize the product, not building the features specifically, but thinking about the monetization. And this works well, like this company is pretty successful. But usually it's still separate function from subscription management. And I feel like the improvement there needs to be like the communication between these two teams, like product monetization and engineering team, to kind of be on the same page, like what is doable, what is taking the resources, how to manage this, how to kind of use the things together. Because if we go if we start discussing A/B testing, I can tell you some like stories, what are the problems there, like how these teams, what are they doing to run A/B testing at the moment, and sometimes it's far from like efficient.
Like what? Maybe just expand on that then. What are some of the common issues?
What we oftenly see at the moment that monetization team or product manager can use a mix of like 4 to 5 tools to actually run A/B testing. They use, let's say, Firebase, pretty popular platform from Google, to split the traffic. But then they use something to track subscriptions, either in-house or a third-party solution, to get subscription data on conversions, on renewals, and so on. And then they send this data to another platform like Amplitude, let's say, to actually visualize the data and try to make conclusions about the data. And also on top of that, some like spreadsheets or statistical calculators to make sense of the results and kind of figure out, is this statistical significant result, how to process it, and so on. So it's like several platforms integrated, stitched together the data flows from one to another. And usually it's hard to maintain, and it can be expensive if you use a lot of platforms, but mainly it's hard to be sure that the data is correct and that you are getting the results that you want, like have clear results. And another thing with this setup, it's pretty slow. So when you want to run new experiment, you usually have a lot of things to think about, a lot of platforms to tweak and to manage.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that also applies to a lot of other aspects of, you know, of subscription optimization, right? Like what you're saying is, it kind of flows into also paywall strategies, right? I often see that when you're, when with, you know, new app developers, or let's say even with more developed ones, to be honest, you see that they're testing different paywalls, but then it's not like an A-B test. It's just completely different paywalls that they're testing, not without some, you know, clear hypothesis in a lot of cases.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of crazy, right? Like, it's kind of crazy how I mean, we still don't know how to do
it's
it.
It's not
well.
Crazy. It's just the way it is. I would say it's when you don't have the right tools, when you don't have the setup for this, it's what else you can do? So you end up with this not A-B testing, just tasting something and hoping that it will work.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, that's true. One thing that I was thinking about is, do you have any funny or not funny, but like any incidents or any best practices from like paywall optimizations as well? Because I'm sure you see a lot of them come through, you know, just because of people using your tool. Do you often find some trends or patterns? Of course, there's tactical things, right? Like long-form yeah. paywalls, etc., which might yeah. be industry best practices, although I have my reservations about it. But yeah, like what do you see in terms of trends and patterns? Let's say if you're a new app developer or someone who's trying to optimize subscriptions, what would you recommend them look at, right? In terms of maybe also paywall optimization?
Yeah, so maybe several things that we think people should be doing, like how to approach this. We think that you should start with like hypothesis statement. First of all, you need to have clear idea about what you want to test, and it should be measurable. So you want, let's say you want to, before you start testing, why are you doing this? You need to kind of formulate a hypothesis that I want my conversion rate to increase by 10%, and I think I can achieve it through changing like this product or this picture in the paywall or this call to action. So you have the hypothesis, mm-hmm. and it's kind of need to make sense before any testing. And the second thing to think upfront of is, do you have enough traffic to do this type of testing? So if it will take you months to get the statistical significance, in this case it might be not the best test. So you need to prioritize your tests. You have several hypotheses, and you see if you have enough traffic to actually test this. I guess this is like a good start if you thought about this couple of things. And then usually the A-B testing itself, it's kind of linked to like some standard elements. So what you want to test is, of course, subscription price and subscription duration, trial, and so on. So like a specific offer that you show. And you need to have setup which allows you to quickly change this and to run experiments around this. But there are also other, I would say, standard elements, specifically if we are talking about a paywall. So the visuals that you show, like the picture or maybe a video. Now we see like it's a trend to test and to use videos in paywalls. So you want to be able to test this element. Then, of course, people are testing like premium features description, how you explain what are those features and what features to highlight in the paywall. And some like CTA and social proof, actually another one which you can test and see if it works well for you. So ideally you want to have the setup where you have all these elements connected to your A-B testing tool, and it's easy for you to change them, to run experiments and see the impact of each of these elements. If you have the setup, then you can quickly run a set of experiments, even like simultaneously run a couple of experiments and see what works best for you.
Makes sense. What is typically the minimum sort of cohort volume that you feel like you should hit before you get into like testing different aspects? So I guess like if you're talking pricing or even like you know, your trial lens and things like that, is it something that you would wait for until you reach X users per week that are coming in, or like just a ballpark range is fine, right? Like for someone to know this.
Yeah, I think maybe I don't have the best answer for this right now, but in general, I wouldn't say it's like too early. It's never too early to start A/B testing. You just need to be careful about like running. If you have several users per day, yes, it won't be valuable to you. And if you have like tens of users per day, then you can start A/B testing, but you can't be running multiple tests and you can't like run tests for very small changes. Your changes needs to be significant. They kind to kind of be able to track the difference. But just like in my mind, if you have, let's say, 1,000 users per month, like 30 more than 30 new users per day, actually you can start A/B testing at least with the pricing, with some like basic stuff, and track some results in reasonable time, see the changes in reasonable time.
Absolutely. I think that's a very one thing that is super easy to understand, but a lot of times is missed, right? When you have, how much should you A/B test and what should you A/B test, right? Because sometimes if you're that small, let's say when you have maybe tens of users coming in, maybe going drastic and going a bit wild with your A/B test to see really what works is a good idea, as long as it doesn't impact revenue in a very big way, right? Like let's say you wanted to increase prices by 100%. Try that, but maybe don't do that when people are converting at a rate. Maybe start small, but if you're designing your paywall completely differently based on whatever feedback you have received, so you had need to have a clear hypothesis. But as soon as you get that, I also always encourage people to just take a shot. It should be data backed with, like, test backed by intuition and data, so you know what is sort of happening for your users. And one thing that I found super interesting was actually around this social proof. I had a client, we tested them receiving an award and a recognition in one of the news press versus showing customer testimonials. And we found that showing the logo of the news article that they were featured in and things like that actually worked better for conversion than user testimonials, because I found that very interesting, right? Like, because people tend to typically trust user testimonials more in the SaaS world, at least, whereas here it's a bit more competitive, so people are looking at like these branded and trusted
One of the things, it makes sense. As you said, you just need to test. You can't actually just rely on your opinion for that. Maybe it works for another app. Though I would say a simple approach when you're just starting is to actually check what other apps in your vertical are doing. And if you check top apps in some specific vertical, you'll see a lot of similarities in their pricing, in their paywalls, and they do a lot of extensive A/B testing. So actually what you are seeing there is like already something that works well for your specific category. So you should, I wouldn't say you should copy it, but you should get some inspiration from it and kind of think of how to approach it. And I think it's important to look specifically at your category, because people behave differently, and something that works in, I don't know, let's say fitness might not work that well in education.
Absolutely. Basically, it's almost like a lookalike, right? So you're looking at apps with a similar user profile and then seeing if someone has already done that sort of thing, right? So you sort of learn from their experience and try to start there already. Makes complete sense. I have two questions left for you, Michael, that I know of. Please speak more if you have more insights, because I love this. But one is, I think we briefly touched upon these like common pitfalls, right? Like when you're doing all of these or maintaining these aspects. But anything else that you'd like to add in terms of these are pitfalls that you keep seeing, almost like an FAQ section, right? Like something that you keep seeing and you feel like, this is happening too often for, and should be avoided at all costs, or should be something that people should be mindful of when they're optimizing their subscriptions.
So of course some basic stuff that we see and which is like low hanging fruit is when people are not showing just not showing paywall during the onboarding. Let's say not every user can subscribe, and it just the easiest thing to do is to show the paywall to all of your users during the onboarding to kind of explain what are the premium features and why a person can subscribe. This is like a no-brainer, and still there are a lot of at least some companies that are not doing this. I would say another one is this lack of clear hypothesis when they approach A/B testing. So it's kind of, yes, we want to do A/B testing, but when you ask them, like, what do you want to test specifically, they don't have clear understanding of what they want to test. I think a lot of struggles are around actually statistical significance, and this is why we have this in our A/B testing solution. We show the statistical significance of the test and also sample size and recommended sample size during the test. So you asked me about like how many users. It's hard to answer like upfront, but in general, in the tool, you can see the recommended number of users in the test. And you need to wait for statistical significant results of the test. If you just launch the test and you see, let's say, that group A performs better than group B, you can, like, some people tend to just stop the experiment prematurely, not waiting long enough to get the results. And a lot of the times, it's just some, like, random effect in the first days, and then it smooths out and you actually see that there is no big difference between the variants. So you should trust the math, you should have the framework, like formulate hypothesis, run the A/B test, wait for statistical significant results, and kind of approach this in structural, like scientific, I would say, way than in chaotic and just doing random stuff. That's like some of the things on top of mind.
Nice. By the way, like on this A/B testing and waiting for significance, because I work as an external consultant to a lot of companies, sometimes I have to stop myself from reporting numbers when I see them like super high. But it's often, you know, I have this template that I use with my clients around like whenever we propose an A/B test, and I have a date when we will analyze the results, and I often get the question like, why, how do we know that we are going to be analyzing these results after 1 month? And that's based on like this calculation. Okay, before that, anything that you look at is probably random, right? But I have typically very hard time convincing people that we need to wait until then, right?
Yeah. To show. It's kind of the same with everyone. I think it's very natural for anyone like to be willing to look immediately at the results, and especially if it confirms what you expect, it's like confirmation bias. You want to to roll out this new version immediately.
Absolutely, super, Michael. And one last question, actually, from my end is around the market, right? So if we step back and like, you know, you are in this zone where you are talking to so many developers and you have like a brilliant tool that I will of course link out to as well, so folks can check it out. What do you see in terms of the market growth, right? Like what I've seen, at least from our conversation, is seems like there's a lot of education still to come. There's, you know, subscription apps are growing crazily. A recent data AI report, I think there was 90% of the money that the non-gaming apps are making are through subscriptions. So there's definitely this trend. Consumers are warming up to the idea of like buying more and more subscription-based services. How do you see the market evolve in terms of, do you feel like we have already started to see, you know, competition crowd out verticals like health and fitness? Or do you feel like there's more to come, and there's also from an infrastructure side, right? Do you feel more and more apps need and will be investing in these infrastructure tools because they don't want to have this internally, which I hope happens? And or how do you see it, right? Like from all of these aspects, also from team aspects, right?
Yes, I think the market is big and it's growing. And as you said, like it's maybe 90% of non-gaming apps are monetizing the subscriptions. And in general, this like total in-app subscriptions or total in-app purchases market is something around 150 billion, if I remember correctly, in spend, and almost half of it now in subscriptions. And it was like 20% in subscriptions several years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. Now it's 50%. So this segment is growing faster. Initially, it's growing faster than gaming segment. Mm. And we see all major platforms, like major social platforms, Meta, and so on, introducing their subscriptions. So people indeed feel like there is if they're getting the value from the platform, from any like app and so on, they're willing to subscribe. They understand why they need to subscribe. They understand that they can be getting a high quality product for free. Otherwise, they are just being monetized. Their data is being monetized with like those platforms. So actually, they might prefer to pay a subscription and have high quality product and not have the data being used. And I think this trend will continue. And it's like more and more companies follow this route. So with OpenAI, they introduced their like $20 subscription for ChatGPT and so on. It's kind of getting normal, and everyone understands why is this. It works for both sides. It both for companies, it both for consumers if you deliver the value. But of course, there is like strong competition, and with some obvious verticals like fitness, for example. Indeed, I think it's kind of much harder to launch a successful app now than it was 5 years ago. And of course, another thing that made it much harder is attribution stuff, once again, about the data. So in this case, it's just much harder. Now it's much harder to target users with Meta's platform and with other social platforms because of Apple privacy stuff. So it's kind of slowing down the growth there. But in general, I think it will continue growing, and subscription monetization is the way to go for more companies. And we'll see. By the way, it's interesting to myself whether mobile games will kind of embrace subscription monetization model. We see some of them experimenting with it. We do have some clients with games using subscriptions, but for now it's not very popular with games. So we'll see if gaming is switching to subscription, then it will be like crazy growth as well.
Yeah, absolutely, because that's like almost an entire industry on its own that moves. Yeah. If it moves to subscription, you have like this insane
rise. Currently it's like two separate industries, gaming and everything else.
Yeah, absolutely. Even in the industry, right? Like you have professionals who have worked with gaming apps, and then you have people who have worked with non-gaming apps only.
Yeah.
And it's always like you don't
on need user to, acquisition, on analytics, on everything, on retention. So yeah, two different stories.
Very fascinating. Well, thank you so much, Michael. It was amazing talking to you. And just departing thoughts, if you have anything that you want to say, or how people can reach you and check out Conversion and what recent stuff. I think you've recently launched a lot of cool stuff as well. So maybe if you want to have any departing thoughts that you'd like to add.
Yeah, so we're focusing now at this A/B testing model. We're constantly improving it. We have the stuff for statistical significance there. So if you are running a subscription app, check out our A/B testing solution. We're happy to host a demo. You can find us at conversion.io. And feel free to connect to myself on LinkedIn, Michael Steisen. Happy to talk to any professional in our industry, and as you, I think you mentioned at the beginning, I do have my own podcast on this, so also happy to talk to interesting people there. So do reach out.
Absolutely. By the way, it's Conversion with a Q, right?
Conversion.io. Yeah.
Perfect. I'm going to add the links, and I'm not one of those people who says it but don't do it. So I'm going to add all the links to it.
Yeah, thank you.
But again, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you, Karan.
Really appreciate it.
Yeah, bye.